the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to a very special episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, coming to you live from a cold basement in the middle of ice cream truck season, Len. Are you getting any trucks in your neighborhood these days?
I haven't heard of any, but doesn't mean that they haven't come by. So, yeah, I mean, I'm usually mostly in my basement doing stuff. So, I don't know. How about over there? Lots of ice cream trucks whipping by?
There's too many. And I tweeted today that I think all ice cream trucks should be mandated to play Furley's. I don't want to hear any bullshit ice cream songs when they drive by. That
It's a great tune.
It's enough to incite the violent death of a stranger, I think. But anyway, we'll talk about that another time. First, Len, let's talk about our sponsors before we bring on our guest, our obvious guest here.
Our obvious guest.
We're sponsored by ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy and never sell your Bitcoin. Len, what do they got going on? Four things all the time. Quatre choses in the mother tongue. They got ShakePaid. You can spend off your CAD balance. They'll comp you the whole thing, all in Satoshis. Can't beat it. They got Shaking Sats. If you sign up with our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, you can shake your phone every day. On day 365, that would be a dream, but on day 365 and every subsequent day, at least for the time being, 1,000 Satoshis right into your dome. They also have the Shake Squads, where you and four people you know or don't know can team up, buy stuff on your CAD balance, and get linked 42 sats per person per purchase. So if me and Len are on a squad together, we both buy, and at the end of the day, we both get 84 sats. You can't beat it. And then finally, Len, they have the Sats Back card, 2% back on your first 5,000 when you spend off your CAD balance, and then 1% after that. It's a deal you cannot beat. We hope you give them a shot if you haven't already.
Absolutely. And after you buy all this Bitcoin, what are you going to do with it? Why not put it on a Ledin platform and open up an account with our referral code below? Put 150,000 Satoshis or 75 USDC on their platform. Keep it on there for 15 consecutive days and they'll reward you with 10 USDC. And if you have a large Bitcoin stack that you don't want to sell, but you need money, Ledin is there to help you out with a borrowing. You could borrow against your Bitcoin, 50% loan to value. If you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, Ledin has the B2X option. I wish the price of Bitcoin was showing my block clock right now, but it's not. But it has pumped in the past little while. So using the B2X option and timing the market right, you can make extra Bitcoin. And the last thing they have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. But check their website to see what jurisdiction they offer the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. But also check their website to see what are the interest rates for the savings and the borrowing rates, because these change on a month-to-month basis.
You think Elon could have used that service instead of dropping 75 points?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the company did it. Tesla did it. Did Elon sell his personal stack? I don't know.
That guy needs to start hitting the treadmill and doing some push-ups. That's a story for another time.
He's only a millionaire.
I'm sure he could figure it out. We have Brian Snyder with us today. He's the CEO of Kabrumrax. Brian, by demand in the chat here, I'm going to show the back of my shirt. You were kind enough to send us both merch.
There you go. Get high on our hash.
Standing shirt. Len, what's your say? Will we get banned? We're getting on the ban hammer here. Ask me about my racks. It's incredible stuff, man. Incredible stuff.
There is a third shirt as well, if I recall correctly.
We got a few more. We're going to be actually revealing a couple more at Mining Disrupt. We've got a couple new, and at least another saying or two at Mining Disrupt. I kind of feel out of place. Like, I wasn't planning on being on this one. So I feel like the odd man out. I'm the only one not wearing a shirt.
So, Brian, if you don't mind just getting off camera, snagging a shirt, throwing it on and coming back, we're good to go.
Change on camera. You got to change on camera.
You don't want to see that, man. I don't want to see that.
Brian, like you mentioned, you're hopping in with us here. You guys did a switcheroo last minute for an appointment. We appreciate you guys still sending us your best and your brightest. Tell people about who you are, what you do, and how you got into Bitcoin.
Sure. I'm Brian Snyder. I'm currently the CEO of Kabrumrax. Got into the Bitcoin back in 2014. So I guess that's early on for a lot of people. Got in specifically on mining, kind of came from an IT background. And so, you know, we ended up moving up to Washington State. We were in data centers initially back in 2013, 2014 timeframe. We were out of basically data centers, to say the least. And then we moved up to Washington State in Moses Lake, Wenatchee, you know, Douglas County, that area for actually mining cheap power. We were chasing the cheap power at the time. And then I met Robert Van Kirk, who's the founder of Kaboom Racks, actually up in Washington. So small community at the time. So anyways, yeah, I mean, I started originally as just kind of something to do and turned into a little bit more than a hobby and then turned into a job pretty quickly. And I've been doing that for, God, almost eight years now. So it's been a while. I'm a huge, you know, Bitcoin fan. I love the technology. I think it's innovative. It's going to change the world. It already is, you know, in a lot of poorer countries. And yeah, we're here to support miners. You know, that's what we're here for. You know, the little guys too that get ignored a lot of times. So
yeah, and
company is.
Sorry, go on.
No, you're good.
No, I was just going to ask about Kaboom Racks specifically. Yes. And who is your target audience right now? Who is your target customer? Is it industrial miners or primarily is it like small people like Joey and myself?
We should maybe say what, like for people who don't know, Kaboom Racks, you know, is a sort of a unique company. Brian, I'd love for you to talk a bit about what you guys do, because as far as I can tell, and I don't want to paint myself as naive or unknowing here, but you guys are operating alone in your sort of niche. I don't think there's a lot of people, if any, that are doing what you guys are doing. So tell us a bit about the operation.
I ordered from them and there was no competition from what
I could
find.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what everyone says. So let's hear it.
So yeah, so primarily we started as a brokerage firm, right? So, you know, connecting, doing bulk orders and splitting those up to individual people. We really started to do at this point almost 2 years ago is we got into the warehousing game and into miner support. So, you know, we do everything from purchase bulk and we'll distribute that down to an individual level, which is unusual. Most brokers, like you were saying, are more on the industrial side. They're not really looking to cater to somebody looking for a one-off or two-off, you know, hey, I've got a small at-home mine. You know, we've got products and we've got, you know, services for that. You know, as an organization over the last couple of years, we've really gotten into a lot more of, for example, microsoldering repair. So, you know, chip level, board level diagnostics and repair. We started that up, you know, about 6 months ago, back in December of this last year. I think one thing that not a lot of people know about us too is we do engineering consulting is a big thing we're working in now. So we've got some engineers on staff. You know, I was kind of always in the game working on facility designs, building my own facilities back in 2014, 2015. You know, we were building our own facilities. You know, we've taken the lessons that we've learned over the 8 years and we're applying them to kind of support our growing customers. You get a lot of people like yourselves who are at-home miners who are all of a sudden now, okay, hey, I'm ready to scale this thing up. I'm looking for 150 kilowatts, a half megawatt, a megawatt, right? Not a 10, 50, 100 megawatts, right? Like a real practical number. And we have engineering services that can help out with that. So, you know, we've seen a huge amount of growth and interest in the industry. The services side is something we're pushing towards as well. And I think it's just a general trend of what this industry is becoming. It's becoming a lot more mature. People are looking for these services and these things. So, yeah, I think we're a little ahead of the game. I don't think anybody's doing quite as much as that. It's exhausting. Right.
You're definitely one of one. And some of the people are asking, what's the S9s these days? What are the prices that they're going for? Because the price of ASIC miners, they've kind of come down in the past little while as the price of Bitcoin has come down. I was wondering if you could give us an update on what you guys are selling your S9s for.
Yeah, I mean, the S9s are definitely on the lower side. I'm not typically involved with sales on the day-to-day. I would say, you know, ballpark, you know, 100, 150 bucks.
Wow.
You know, they're definitely down from where we were looking at even, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago when they were going for 400, 500, 600 bucks. So they're definitely, you know, more affordable now than they've ever been. We've also seen the larger inventory items like the S19 has come down. And what's kind of cool, and I think for the at-home miner, is we're seeing a lot more of that generation equipment now becoming available. So you've got a lot of these industrial miners that are starting to ramp up for the XPs. They're getting rid of their old used S19s. So now even we're starting to see some deals on S19s used. They don't have the Bitmain warranty, but you know, that's why we're trying to ramp up what we're doing in microsoldering, because we're looking to offer, you know, potentially warranty services as well as we move forward.
That's a really sharp service. There's comments in the chat here about how good the website looks. The website looks great. The Telegram chat, the channel that you guys run, is really well done. There, it's kind of a well, you know, I'll put it as best I can here. In a world where almost every Telegram channel is full of bullshit and nonsense, this is like really, it's really well kept. It's very tidy, easy to find, easy to search, more importantly, with all the details you need. Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. So I guess, Brian, one thing, I know you said you weren't in sales, but humor me here. Mm-hmm. You guys have to really contend with the price of Bitcoin as far as your day-to-day operations, for sure. Yeah, the demand for miners is a derivative of the price, along with a number of other factors that would play into the sort of demand for your product, your sort of brokerage. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the demand in the coming months this time around? We'll call this a bear market, as opposed to what you might have seen during the drop from 60 to 30 last year, or other downturns, other sort of prolonged and notable downturns. In my view, and I don't want to speak for Len, Len's more the mining head than I am, but in my view, it seems to me like the price matters less and less as more and more people are willing to buy or mine at a loss, for example, for a short time, understanding the price is going to go up. Do you see that reflected in demand this time around? Is it more likely in your view that the demand remains high or finds a higher floor than in previous downturns?
Well, I think you're always going to see a demand, and there's always a lot of movement that's occurring behind the scenes, right? I mean, we talk about industrialized miners, you know, the large-scale operations. They're always looking to push their older equipment out. And so we've always got sort of this, you know, turnover in the marketplace. So from that perspective, I would say, yeah, I mean, we notice slowdowns when the price comes down. We definitely notice a big drop off on, let's say, the smaller individual consumer going for, you know, a larger allocation or a purchase. We don't really see a slowdown when it comes to the industrial miners. They're still looking at, you know, you got a lot of US-based companies that are looking at getting rid of, say, their S17s or their M20s is a really big one right now. And, you know, there's a lot of buyers for those. They're going to the secondary and the tertiary market. So you're looking at Venezuela, for example, you know, as a potential, you know, acquisition period, or either other countries in South America where they have a lower energy cost, but they have less capitalization to be able to do things. So there's definitely a huge marketplace. And it's opportunistic for the U.S. companies, you know, as they get their newer equipment coming in, their S19s, their XPs in the future, to, you know, unload that old equipment. You know, obviously, it's smarter for them to unload it at the peak or the highest everybody would want to. But, you know, what's the point of keeping a stockpile of a bunch of old miners, you know, in the graveyard? You know, put that money to work, use that as working capital, you know, hold on to more Bitcoin, pay the power bill with that. Like, you know, there's so many different more approaches. I mean, right now is the time you want to be holding onto your Bitcoin as you're mining, not liquidating or not, you know, it's, yeah, so.
Yeah, and for the people that actually want to get into home mining, and they're going to be setting up, say, one or a few machines, could you give any advice for what they should be seeking, how they should set it up? Because your knowledge will help a lot of people progress in this field should they want to dip their toes in it.
Or even the process itself, Brian, like the buying and receiving and all that stuff. Because there's, you know, we just came from a meetup on the weekend. At least a few people were talking about the miners that were being raffled off. And they're mentioning to us that we talked about Kaboom Racks and Len used Kaboom Racks once. And like, I don't know anything about the process. I would like people to know about it. Len seems to have enjoyed his process once upon a time. So yeah, if you could give us like a window into that, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we recently just launched a website, a store, parts.kaboomracks.com. And the idea is to try to make it a little bit more seamless. If somebody just needs a cable or a power supply or, you know, a peripheral item, you know, to support what you might have already purchased from us or so they've gotten from somebody else, you know, that you can do that. So we're trying to get a little bit better in terms of the web store. You know, there's still a personality involved. You know, you contact, you know, us, our sales team through Telegram, get a hold of Robert or Nick. You know, chat with them. They can help you, you know, figure out and pick what type of miner you're looking for. And, you know, we'll help you out of the process a little bit in terms of like, okay, what do I need? Make sure you guys are set up with the right voltage, you know, call your electrician and be like, hey, I need this 208 circuit put in. I'm going to put a crazy, you know, noisy, nice and warming box in my garage, right? My wife's going to hate me, you know, all that fun stuff.
If you make it to the point where your wife hates you, it's already a win, by the way. I can't even make it there. So
you could massage the situation at that point.
Yeah, I can't even make it
there. I was going to say, you're looking for an exit. Maybe it's time for a new wife. That's all right. Oh, no. The dryer's got to go. The S19 needs a dryer outlet.
Yeah. And lately we had a lot of miners hit the market. And you mentioned like there's industrial miners, they're liquidating because they need working capital given the prices are depressed. Is this causing you guys issues as well, moving your equipment? I mean, I would imagine there's a glut of stuff on the market right now. And I would imagine it's causing you a little bit of concern these days.
Keeps us busy and on our toes. I'll tell you that much. Like I said, you know, secondary, tertiary markets, price volatility. You got some people that are looking to liquidate quickly. And honestly, we're seeing, I think, a lot of people, even with this 10% bump we've seen over the last 30 days, and I guess it's probably a little bit more. I try not to watch the price every day. You know, we're already seeing a huge amount of people, and like we're already seeing the price tick back up. So, I mean, we're seeing, you know, almost $30 a terahash for an S19. You know, it's already creeping up, you know, 35. It'll probably be up to 40 relatively soon. So, yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing movement. We've got a lot of people that are like, they've been sitting on the sidelines. So I imagine you're going to probably have that buying force come back as they start to realize, hey, maybe we hit the bottom, right? Like, so that's the one thing you don't want to do. You don't want to try to miss the bottom. If we're already coming up, you want to be getting your money and getting your equipment when the price is cheap. So
yeah, I think that's
so I tell everybody, man, I was like, every time this market comes around, I'm like, now's the best time to get in. Now's the best time to buy. Like, you're going to get the best return for your money. It was right now. And everybody's like, no, I'll buy when it's up. And then they're buying when it's like 60,000. And I'm like, guys, you just bought a $15,000 at S19. I was like, could have bought it, you know, 6 months ago. It's like, yeah, when it's not profitable to mine, it's typically the best time to buy the equipment.
Yes, yes. This is something I think a lot of people don't understand, Brian, that like the mining at a loss is one thing. And I had a conversation with someone about this on the weekend, that there's this false dichotomy between mining at a loss and just using that money instead of, you know, paying for electricity, paying for the miner, maintenance, all that stuff, and just buying Bitcoin on exchanges or whatever. But, you know, I would be curious here if you have some thoughts about this as a guy who's in the mining industry and has been in mining. Do you find that there's, you know, there maybe should be a premium that home miners are considering on non-KYC sats? Because it seems to me like that is becoming more and more something that I'm considering when I'm making my buys or browsing your website or talking to other people who have miners. What do you think of that? What is the sort of feeling you get from customers and also your own thoughts as well?
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting things, right? Like, you look at the idea of, you know, Virgin Bitcoin. We already know there's a marketplace that exists out there for it. You've already got Goldman Sachs and some of these other organizations that are literally buying only Bitcoin that's being minted. So, you know, if you're kind of looking at a way to, you know, okay, I'm going to go to an exchange, I'm going to buy some Bitcoin, it's like, that's tainted. You know, it's gone through so many transactions. It's like, it's kind of like the $1 bill, right? Every $1 bill has probably been in the G-string of a strip club somewhere at some point in time, right? So it's the same concept with your Satoshis. And really, you're right. About the only way that you can end up getting a, you know, truly minted Satoshi is via, you know, mining and mining yourself. Or you would have to have some crazy connection with, you know, one of these mega mines, and you're going to, you know, buy its output, you know, these rental contracts, the contract side. So, you know, yeah, absolutely. If you're looking to do some stuff that's, you know, not necessarily on the books anywhere, or just, you know, in a ledger as a virgin, never touched, and you're looking to, you know, who knows, pass that down to your grandchildren, right? Go mine a quarter Bitcoin. It's like, what happens if that's worth $2 million in, you know, 20, 30 years from now, right? It's consideration for the future. And it's something that, you know, is basically like a mint coin out of circulation. I mean, what's the premium right now on the, the coins they passed out in like 2013 Las Vegas? I was just talking to somebody about buying one of their coins. I can't remember, but they passed out single Bitcoin BTCs that were worth something like $40 to $60 at the time. And those currently go for on the market about two, and at the peak, they're going for 2 to 3x their value. So, you know, collectors are buying those. So like literally for 2-3x. And that's it. So there you go. I mean, if you want to know what the potential virgin premium might carry in the future, that's probably only going to increase as all these other miners eventually sell and it moves through exchanges and everything else. So yeah, I think that's a great point.
And for those mining at home, don't make the mistake by moving the coin that you mined into a wallet that you are with some KYC Bitcoin. But in terms of what you're offering at Kaboom Racks, I know that you preload Brains OS on the miners that can take Brains OS. Could you talk about the benefits of Brains OS? Because this is rather huge and a lot of people aren't familiar with the product.
Yeah. So look, I mean, we're very technical here. So I can tell you from our engineering and our consulting teams that work on the large mines, you know, we've used all sorts of different firmwares. So we have relationships with a lot of the guys who actually develop them. So yeah, Brains has just been a very easy to use product when it comes to the at-home miner, especially if you only have one or two machines. It works fantastic. You know, you if you look at scale, you know, you've got Vanish is a really good product. You know, you even have ASICs here. So there's multiple different ones out there, and they all kind of have advantages. You know, we've just chosen because of the simplicity with the Brains interface, and it's, you know, much better than stock firmware. Like the Bitmain stock is like a travesty. the stock firmware is bad, you know, and these companies have been around for a while, and they're, you know, you don't have to worry about them stealing more than the fees are worth. That's something we try to check as well. But yeah, aftermarket firmware is a great way to increase your profitability. You're running an S19 today. You know, we've got, you can go to kaboomrax.com/firmware or go to our firmware site, and you can actually download Kaboomrax branded, which has slightly lower fee, I think, than the stock firmware for Vanish. And, you know, we've got all the firmwares up there for the S17, the S19, and the S9 as well. So
I guess the next, you got a follow up there, Len? Hit him with it if you got one.
No, go ahead. I was going to ask if what's miners also get the Brains OS. Are you familiar if they do have it yet? I know they're trying to unlock it, but I'm not sure if they did.
We literally just started using aftermarket firmware. In fact, it's actually a different guy who worked with Vanish in the past. It's chipless, but we've got a brand on that. I don't know. I'll have to check with Alex. I know we were looking at getting some of that up, but yeah, WattsMiner just recently started having some aftermarket firmware, which is great. You know, I think we were looking at about a 10% efficiency gain. I think quite literally Alex is in the back right now messing around with the firmware. So we're very early stages. We try to validate things, test it, run it, break it ourselves here so we can fix it, you know, before we start syndicating that out to the home miners and our customers. Yeah, that's what we're in the process of doing now.
If you want to test it in the field, I'm sure Joey's going to volunteer his services. So
yeah, send it over. I'll be sleeping in a tent in my backyard, buddy. If you need to get a hold of me, Len, you'll be doing this show on your own. The Wi-Fi is not that great out there. Brian, I got a question for you here. I don't want to throw cold water on Kaboom or any home miner. Help me understand how in future, let's assume, I think we all probably feel that the industrial mining scene is going to continue to grow and you're going to continue to have more and more competition, not only between them, but also between them and the home mining scene. What is the likelihood in your view that home miners are eventually just completely priced out of the market, that it's just not going to be worth running an S19 or an S, you know, whatever the model is down the road with the cost of electricity at the home, you know, sort of also, I guess you could say through the lens of more than I'm willing to mention first world governments thinking about moving away from cheap power sort of as a policy position. Are you guys worried about that? What is the model for Kaboom in that scenario? Because it seems to me like that's sort of developing slowly. I don't know if it's a sure thing, but it's got to be on your radar, right?
Well, I think, yeah. But I mean, at the same time, you've got exceptions to that as well. You've got a lot of these guys are getting really innovative. You know, I've talked to some home miners that are setting up solar systems and, you know, they're overbuilding the solar system so that they can actually run mining, you know, effectively there during the day and their peaks. And then they're running it in the evenings. The other thing to take into consideration is waste heat. You know, so you can literally heat your house up. So when we were living in Moses Lake, Washington, it got cold, right? So what we did, we had a rental house. And so what we did is we went over to the AC, we had ripped open the panel, and we actually stuck, like, I think we were S3s at the time, four S3s into the AC vent. We let the fan in, we removed the heating element. And then when the heater would call, it would turn on the S3s, which would mine for us. Now, look, we were losing money on this, right? Like, I think we were, you know, paying 6-7 cents per kilowatt hour. They only generated 3 to 4 cents, but that's an offset. We were going to use that power anyways to heat our house. And now all of a sudden I'm getting half of that back in Bitcoin. Now, if I look back at that, this was probably circa 2015, 2016. So I probably was actually making about $100 to $300 per day. I was running those S3s, which at the time was a loss. So, I mean, everything's context, right? So, like you were saying before with the home miners, if they're looking at the long term, if they're looking at all of that, you know, even at a loss, also think there's issues with distribution of the grid. You know, there's only so many mega locations that these large, massive mines can be built. Mm-hmm. You know, the grid is distributed. Power is distributed. It's not focused and localized. And so, you know, I think home miners are always going to have opportunities here and there and, you know, in better energy districts than the others, and solar and other, you know, other different types of offsets. And again, hey, maybe you want a heated pool. Well, guess what? We'll drop your heated pool cost in half. You know, one of the projects we're working on here is with one of our partners. And basically the idea is a immersion system that can be hooked up to, for example, to either use it to pre-warm your hot water, like before your hot water heater, or hooked up, for example, to a pool so that you could heat your pool using the heat discharge of an S19 or other units. So there's all sorts of innovative ways. I really don't think the home market is as dead as everybody thinks it is. There's a lot of different ways you can put heat to use. Agriculture is a big one, you know, farmers, that sort of thing. So don't rule it out of the market quite yet. There's a lot of applications that people are very creative on and innovative on.
Are you willing to talk about who that partner is? Like, because that's an interesting project, my friend. The pool heating one has piqued my interest, Brian. I've been in a cold pool in my day, sir. It'd be nice to not hop into a cold pool for reasons the three of us can understand better than maybe some other people. So, you know, I'd be interested in hearing more about that if you're willing to talk about it.
So tell you what, I'll leave that one to Nick. So if you can get Nick on here, drag him up here. It's one of the projects he's working on, but I'm sure he'd love to talk to about it. In fact, we need to actually, that's one of the things I was going to work on before I went home today. We need to get a few more pumps working, but yeah, I'll let Nick fill you in, or Alex fill you in. Well, we might put a blog article up on it as well. So, but I'll let you know there as we move forward. So
it will make things much more economically efficient to actually run a miner, if that's the case, if you could repurpose the heat for something else. It just makes it all the more attractive to mine it at home. And I just wanted to transition to a different topic. Intel and Samsung, they each came out with announcements separately, and it looks like Intel's announcement is a little bit more mature as they're shipping some of the miners out to their customers. Have you come across any of these two mining equipment from either Intel or Samsung? I'm just curious if you've seen them in the wild as of yet.
Not today. I have played around a little bit with some of the Samsung chips, or I've gotten a little bit closer to some of those chips, but I haven't had a chance to play with the Intels. So I'm very curious as well to kind of get a hold of those miners, see how user-friendly they are and everything else. So,
is there any feedback you could give on the Samsung right now? I don't know if you have an NDA that you signed.
Brian, let's go. Forget about the NDA. Brian, I don't care about three letters, okay? It's RFN, right fucking now. I want to hear whatever you got. Let's have it.
We don't want to put him in an uncomfortable position if you can't talk about it, though.
I was going to say, unfortunately, with the contracts we have, you know, all that stuff. So NDAs on that stuff. But
it's all good. It's fine. I guess
good. More manufacturers in this space, I think, is needed. We need a little bit more maturity. It kind of stinks when you've got two companies that are bullhorning all the pricing. I understand there's a supply and demand issue, but at the same time, it's like they definitely, you know, it kind of feels like they're the oil company, right? They can't lose in terms of pricing. You know, I guess that's what you get when you get money printers. But having some other competitions in, I think, will help drive some of those prices down to something a little bit more reasonable as they get competitive. And I also think you're going to hit a saturation point. You know, there's only so much power, you know, available out there on the grid and where these miners can go in large mega mines. So you are kind of seeing, I think, a little bit of those, some of those saturation points. And again, that's opportunistic for home miners too. You know, if you've hit the max cap in terms of what you can deploy, you know, I hear so many projects all the time. Oh, we got 100 megawatts. We got 200 megawatts, right? 6 months later, hey, what happened to that project? yeah, they didn't actually have that power. And it's like, yeah, not surprised when you're talking on that level.
No, so, this is why you got to learn Russian, because they have lots of power available over there. And if you could speak fluently, you might have a whole new set of customers.
We're not going there.
I was going to say, we got some issues right now, unfortunately. I'm pretty sure if you actually managed to get into Russia and then got back, you'd probably have a lengthy conversation with immigrations as you come back into the country. Something I wouldn't want to push right now.
Understood.
That's fair. Brian, one thing I've heard in the last little while, probably for the first time in my 5 or so years in Bitcoin, is talk of the miner form factor reaching maturity. that there's going to be a call soon for a different form factor. You're laughing. So can you talk to me about this? Because this is something I've never heard before. And now suddenly I hear it on probably 20% of the mining spaces or conversations that I listen to. So you've obviously heard this as well. Why are you laughing? Tell me why this is insane.
Because it would be wonderful if they actually had a mining form factor. I can tell you from being in manufacturing before, you know, we've literally produced things to have to fit inside of a data center, right? Like in data centers, they don't let you put, you know, wood shelves up and cardboard all over. There's standards. So you have to mount everything in racks. So we actually would produce custom, you know, designed racks that you can stick an S9 in, whatever. And it's always been a nightmare because every iteration of an S9, an S19 or whatever, an S19J versus the Pro, it's like, why is it half an inch taller? Why is it an inch taller? Like, I literally set up the spacing perfectly for airflow containment and everything else. I mean, this is why you see all these facilities, you know, they're running, you know, walls that can literally rip down and then put a new wall up to cookie cutter new holes in because the form factor of the miner changes every single iteration. It's insane. Yeah, it would be nice to have a little bit of sanity around the design spec and also from shipping and logistics and so many other things. It's like pricing is always, you know, all over the place. It's like, why in the world does this thing look like that? So, you know, I don't know. It's like you got two stack fans and now we're going to be four stack fans. It's like, okay, guys, like let's get to some type of standards. It'd just be nice if even within the same model, like the S19 series, the things were all the same size and you didn't have five different physical sizes in there, even for at home miners or industrial miners, where they're like, hey, I'm going to spread my rack shelf out, you know, 15 inches. Okay, yeah, we got 14 inches. We got an inch spare. Bitmain comes out and says, we're going to go 15 and a half on this one. And they're just like, well, damn it.
I guess you're not a fan of the S19 hydros. Those things are just humongous.
That's what I was about to say. Like these miners that are like with the innovative cooling options, they're never going to be the same size. And so I guess the other question I have for you, Brian, since that felt like maybe it was cathartic for you. Maybe you don't have a cigarette after that. What is the ideal form factor for you? You sell to big guys, you sell to little guys. What's the form factor? What do you want to see?
To be honest, I don't know. I mean, there's definitely some advantages to the simple shoebox design when you're talking about rack mounting things. And there's some advantages to the, for example, server case design, which is, you know, a standard we see in the IT world. So I think there's probably, with the way everything's getting industrialized, I wonder if they will go into sort of a standard 19U cab form factor. I mean, I've seen some talks from Bitmain, from Wattsminer, even looking like that's going to be the standard they're going to. But I'm not sure what you, honestly, I haven't followed it 100% to be frank. So. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you have a customer that's approaching you for the first time and say this guy's name is Joey and he's trying to tap your information, your knowledge. Is what should he be using to appease not just his wife, but his pocketbook as well? What would you recommend that he purchase for his first miner for home?
This is an interesting question, okay? And it's not just for me and other guys in my situation. It is for people who don't have garages, for example, don't have basements, have neighbors maybe that they, you know, last year, purely hypothetical here again, there was an incident with a fence where they didn't want to split the cost. Many different situations where you don't want to upset somebody.
To take care of that.
Yeah, you don't want to upset somebody internally or externally. You know, this is an interesting question. What's the balance between noise, cost, efficiency, all that stuff? Like, what do you recommend to the average home miner?
It's a good question. I mean, the S9 has been a great one so far, right? So it actually, I think, relates back more to aftermarket firmware. Look at it, and the S17 hasn't been the most successful design, right? But maybe an M20 is a better use case. You start to look at the aftermarket firmware that's coming out. What you can be doing is you can be getting an M20 and then you can be downclocking it, which is number one, going to make it more efficient. It's going to burn less power, but still generate a significant amount of satoshis. You might still generate 80% of the hash rate, but you might be at like 60% of the power utilization. And what that's going to do is it's going to turn down the fan. So you're not going to have to run the fan as much, piss off your neighbors. Now, the neighbors with the fence, I would just build everything and face it right at them and be like, you sure you don't want to split the cost on the fence with me? Because
I had to build it. I had to pay to get it built. No, I had to pay to get it built. I couldn't wait. I need a fence. I got a dog.
It would have been cheaper for you to buy the miners, mine with the miners, piss off the neighbors so much that they want to put the fence up, and then you move the miners. So you know, it could have gone over that way. You would have paid for the miners. How about you splitting the fence in half?
good advice on CBP tonight.
Well, what you're saying is correct in terms of underclocking and making it more efficient. And one of the things I've been reading, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, the S19s don't seem to be too industrious, too robust as the S9s. So they're very sensitive to heat. What's your thoughts on that? Because everything I read about it is the hotter they get, the more power they take, and they don't generate any much more Bitcoin. Not the same like the S9s did. You just keep ramming power and it just make more Bitcoin.
That's not necessarily true. If you do have the cooling capabilities, the S19 could be a monster. Personally, we've overclocked. We have overclocking capabilities here with a lot of immersion miners that we're working with. So that's where they're using a dielectric fluid. They're actually submerging it, just like we were talking about earlier with the idea of heating pools. Those immersion miners are on average getting around 140 to 150 terahashes out of 100 to 140 unit. Yes, the power efficiency drops in terms of the curve, but you know, as you start to approach 5,500 watts, yes, you're pushing almost 6 kilowatts into one S19, but because it's immersed and you're capable of removing that heat more efficiently, it works great. So the heat, it's the heat dissipation is your enemy on that one. I would say, I think the S19, if you compare to the S9, yeah, the S9 was probably the best, right? But you look at the S19, it's light years ahead of the S17. So I think for being around for a while, the S19 is a good bet. It's going to be downclockable. I know Vinesh, I know Brains, and all these other guys out there are going to be working on aftermarket firmware to be able to downclock. And that's the thing, right? I mean, if you turn the power down a little bit, it really doesn't overheat. You know, you drop back 20% of the power and you drop 10 to 15 to 20 degrees Celsius on from the chips. I mean, Bitmain sends these things out cranked to 100%, man. I was like, it's not hard to dial it back a little bit. But yeah, so that's kind of our assessment on that one. But the S19, I'd say, is actually definitely more rigid. The board design is a heck of a lot better than the S17 when it comes to actually repairability. Over time, it's got a lot more safety protocols that prevent the chips from getting fried if you have a voltage or an oversurge. So I'm rambling on a bunch of technical stats. It's what we've been working on in the back a lot. So, but yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. But the S19 is pretty solid.
People have been asking for this, Brian. We didn't bring you guys on for the shirts. We brought you guys on because people have been asking about this stuff. I don't have any fucking idea what I'm talking about. So we need this content, man. Go like, if you want to roll downhill. On the sort of aftermarket side of things, there's at least one or two people building products to store miners, indoor, outdoor, et cetera, et cetera. One of them is Steve Barber, and Steve has built this black box thing. I'm sure you guys are familiar with that. So, what do you think the future is for those sorts of aftermarket sidekicks? Is that an important thing? You guys recommend something like that for the average person, or would you prefer to see them, I don't know, like mount it somewhere, or like what people must ask this question all the time. In my head, apart from a rack, I can't even really visualize where you would park an S9 or an S19 in your home. Like, you'd maybe put it on a table or something. Like, where would you put the thing?
It's a talking piece.
I have no idea. What would you do with it? I honestly have no idea. In my head, I can't visualize anything except either the black box. I saw some guy jerry rig a cooler talking about pissing off your wife. That would probably do it. And then I've also seen, of course, the industrial setting. So, what do you recommend to people?
Yeah, I mean, traditional rack is nice because of maintenance. You can, you know, make sure you're cleaning and everything else. I mean, the black box is innovative. It's an interesting way to solve the problem, right? Because you're basically putting the problem outside. It's not in the house. So at that point, you know, you don't have a lot of it. And if I remember correctly, with the black box, they use sound dampening and everything else. So you can't even really hear the thing. I think if you're looking to reuse the heat, obviously you have to keep that more in the house, you know, good position for that. It's more than likely your garage. And if you wanted to and get really high tech, right, you could do something with a thermometer that says, you know, when the thermometer close, I'm going to change the louver and I'm going to move it from venting directly outside of the house, you know, it's like for the garage, just blowing straight outside, to actually either recirculating that air into the garage or potentially pushing that air into my duct system in my house, which you'll want some type of filter and everything else. So there's some other considerations to think of as well when you're talking about that. But, yeah, you could definitely do it like that. Obviously, local heaters work well. S9s make fantastic heaters when they're turned down to 400 watts or 500, 600 watts. I mean, that's the same as a space heater, right? I think most space heaters are between 800 watts to 900 watts. So you just have your S9 with one of those little temperature things that plugs right into the 120 wall, hooked to your S9, and it just, when it gets too cold in the room, S9 turns on. The fans are really low. You don't need two. You can use one fan, and it'll space heat your room just like a space heater would. And you don't even need to run your central, you know, your central heat. So there's definitely some innovative ways out there, but I would say your garage is probably the safest bet. Black box would work as another one. And if I've seen some industrious home setups, man, I mean, they're basically like micro scales of some of these large minds. Like some of these guys are like calling up their electrician going, "Hey man, can you put a 400 amp panel in here?" And then, you know, the power company is like, "What the hell is this maniac trying to do at his house?" It's just like, it's pretty entertaining. But yeah, you can run those pretty elaborate setups as well. And if you can repurpose it, great. You know, if you've got a greenhouse outside, hey, let's plumb that heat into that greenhouse, especially over winter, and we can grow crops all year round.
That's it. So. Crops is an interesting way of saying dope, Brian. But I agree. Yeah, for
if
sure.
If you want to get swatted, man, that's the way you do it.
In Canada,
Bitcoin mining,
it's legal here, buddy. We can grow whatever we want over here.
Yeah, three plants per person per household. I think that's the number. So yeah, so I've been trying to work on Joey to ramp up his shed to be a
my cropperation. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You could hook up a few miners, and I'm gonna put you in a spot here.
Shoot.
Now, I've got a question from a listener from their show, and because we deal with Canadians primarily, mm-hmm. do you know how long it would typically take if they order a miner through you to be shipped to Canada, and do you know if there are any duties included with the shipping costs?
So all of our pricing with Kaboom Racks is, you know, typically DDP, so that means delivered, you know, to you. Obviously, if they, you know, you live near Alaska or in the middle of nowhere, there might be an additional shipping cost if you live in the middle of nowhere. But generally speaking, in continental US, all the way up into to most parts of Canada, Vancouver, Montreal areas, you know, your bigger areas, shipping is included. And we take care of all the duties and all of that. So all the paperwork and everything else. We try to make it as convenient as we can on the shipping side, because it is complicated. We've got, you know, literally dedicated resources just for figuring out the harmonization codes and trying to, you know, stay compliant and, you know, not piss off Uncle Sam and, you know, Trudeau. So,
and I got a follow-up question to that then. So for somebody that does order a miner through you and set it up, what would be your recommendation when they should service it, take it apart and clean it? How often should they be doing it?
It depends on the environment that it's being run in primarily. You can have some pretty, you know, clean environments. You know, if you are in Texas or the middle of the desert, you know, you should probably be blowing that thing out like once a week. Maybe not a full disassembly clean, but just like hitting it, you know, from the different direction, you know, at the very least once a month. Ideally, it's just better if you can spend a little bit of money and time, you know, filtering, even their washable filters, so you can reuse them. Having some type of filters on the intake side keeps dirt, debris, and stuff down. We've seen so many miners, we refurbish and repair them here, and, you know, if they're left into the elements, they will die. It's electronics. They do much better. They're built much, you know, better than your normal PC, how he would fare on the outside, but they're still electronic. So I would say, you know, once a month if they're pretty bad condition, or, you know, once every 6 months in terms of maybe taking the time to do a better clean down. And then really, you know, and one thing we try to service too is thermal paste. We re-thermal paste a lot of our older miners here. Is looking at thermal paste. Thermal paste only lasts on average about 18 months with the utilization that we're getting here, maybe 2 years. But miners in general, you know, need to have their thermal paste. It dries out, it becomes hard, and then the chips and everything else start overheating. So if you're starting to see overheat issues with your miners, you know, reapplying the thermal paste can definitely be a benefit. And that's only on some models. Like if you've got the heat sink where it fits on versus the S17s, we have the opposite problem. A lot of people see the S17 failures because they use, they don't use thermal paste. They actually use solder to bond the, heat sink on directly under the surface of the chip, and they end up with problems where that gets too hot or the solder breaks down. You get solder balls and connections, and it causes issues. So
Well, solder balls is one of the, my least favorite things to have.
You don't want solder balls.
No, I've never enjoyed that. Len, have you? You're laughing over there.
No, I've never.
No, don't solder your balls.
I've never, and I never will, but.
Yeah, but whatever. You're doing the privacy of your own home is up to you. Okay, go ahead.
I have one follow-up question to that. There's been not really a movement, but there's been a lot of talk about changing the heat sinks on the mm-hmm. miners. I think to silver, I think is what they're saying is much more. I'm not sure if I'm correct in that. Do you recommend changing the heat sinks to stock heat sinks to something else in some of these miners, or just leaving it as it is?
There's definitely some improvements on the heat sinks that can be done. I'm sure there's some people who've come up with a really clever idea. Silver doesn't seem practical from a costing perspective, just off the top of my head, that I can think of. We have looked at some aftermarket heat sinks. I think for the S17s, because of the issues involved with the low-grade solder they used for bonding the heat sinks, yeah, there's a lot of aftermarket heat sinks. S19s, I don't think you're going to see that problem. I mean, we've been able to push these things up to 6, 7, almost 8,000 kilowatts in immersion environments. So it's definitely a lot more to do with the cooling of your facility, how much airflow you've got flowing through it, how dirty those things are getting, etc. I don't really think an aftermarket heatsink generally is going to be a big investment, except for the S17, right? The S17 is a freaking disaster with the default heatsinks. Those things just kind of like popping off. I had a buddy of mine who's up in Minnesota, and he had a bunch of S17s. He had finished repairing all these different heatsinks on it, right? And so he took it out, and you know, it's the middle of winter there. It's negative 40. He put them in the back of his car. You left running. He drove over to the facility to deploy him. Pops open the trunk. Cold air comes rushing in, and he just hears tink, and then tink, 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 tink. And so the temperature differential was actually causing the heat sinks to pop off. Like, wow. You know, this 50 to 100 hours of work for him to repair like 10 S17s, and now he's just hearing tinking sounds as his heat sinks are flying off of it because it just went from 70 degrees to negative 40 degrees, and it wasn't having it. Expansion and contraction, man.
That is rough. That is so rough. That's a nice segue. I don't know if you have any more questions, Len. I got one more here. It's two parts, Brian.
Shoot.
When I tell people about Bitcoin, they always ask, like, you know, is it going to be too hard? What do I need to know? All this stuff. My default is, if you can download a torrent, like if you're old enough to remember downloading a torrent file, getting the torrent client, finding the magnet link, all that stuff. If you can do that, you can set up a Bitcoin hardware wallet. Easy. What do you think the technical, like, what is the competency floor as far as technically, you know, setting up the software and things of that nature, getting all that stuff to fire for you? And also, now that I know that all this repair stuff goes on in the home mining space as well, the hardware side, what mm-hmm. sort of skills do you think someone who buys a miner needs to have before they get the thing to their home in order to really have a good time with it?
I mean, look, basic networking knowledge is useful. You know, if you understand IPs, that sort of thing, how to, you know, log into your router so that you can find the miner when you actually plug it in, understand enough about the voltage. You know, you generally don't want to be running these things on 120 volt in any situation, really. You should always have a 208 circuit. So understanding of electricity enough to be able to manage that. And then, like you were saying, I think a lot of it is, you know, there's some good YouTube content videos out there in terms of, hey, this is how you set up a pool. I think the pools have pretty good instructional guides. If you go, you know, do your research and find whatever pool you like and then, you know, run through that. They have some great setup guides. I mean, if you can read or you can watch a YouTube video, you can figure out how to Bitcoin mine. It's really not that complicated. I'd say the more complicated part is, you know, do you have the ability to, you know, set up a vent and vent this thing out, put a hole in your garage, or, you know, or you're going to be the, do it the lazy way and just, you know, okay, sorry, you know, we don't need a dryer anymore. We have an S19 now, you know, and just plug it in the laundry room, open the window and turn the fan on. And it works. I mean, it gets the job done, right? So like making those sats, but.
And if I could just piggyback off that, I'd recommend Slush Pool if you are using Brains. It just only makes sense because they're paired together. So sorry, Joey. I know you have another question.
It's all good. That was the end. Brian, you crushed, man. The chat is saying great energy here. We don't get a lot of guests with this sort of technical knowledge. And like I said, this is something a lot of our listeners have been asking for, this mining stuff. Home mining is on vogue once again, I think, my friend. I know I'm leaving this conversation. I'm not going to close the Kaboom Rags tab when I leave here. I'll tell you that. Tell people before you go, first of all, where they can find you, where they can find Kaboom Racks, and whatever else you guys want to hand off, this is your chance.
Well, definitely, you know, join the Telegram, our marketplace. KaboomRacks.com is another place. We're also going to be at Mining Disrupt next week. So we're actually getting set to fly out there on Saturday. We'll be at the biggest Bitcoin mining conference, I would say, you know, is Mining Disrupt. Definitely the most characters, especially for home miners. You know, I know Bitmain throws some conferences, but, you know, the space and the energy is fantastic at Disrupt. So we're going to be out there. Feel free to stop by. And like I said, you can also, you know, reach myself, Rob, or Nick via the Telegram marketplace or through our website as well. So feel free to reach out if you guys got questions, looking to buy some miners, some equipment, or you're just looking to, you know, shoe up, hey, I need some replacement parts or, you know, other things or cables. You know,
okay, Brian, that's all good, but people are not going to be asking about cables. They're going to be asking about shirts. Can they buy the shirts? Because I'll tell you right now, people are going to be asking about this shirt on the next live stream Monday night.
All right, so parts.kaboomrack.com. I am 90% certain. If we don't, I got to yell at some people. We've got our shirts posted on there, so you can absolutely buy a shirt right off our website. And if you're at Disrupt, we're going to be giving away. I think we've got like 400 shirts ready to give away. So come by the booth early, and then also we're going to have coffee at our booth as well, out of Disrupt. So come by, have a coffee, come chat.
Coffee and a shirt.
Coffee and a shirt, man. So
it's definitely a win.
Yeah, Brian, that was great. So everyone, head to Disrupt. If you're in the area, go. If you're not in the area, KaboomRacks.com, all the stuff you need. Brian Snyder, CEO. Sir, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. You crushed.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You as well.